radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 440 for Wednesday, the 11th of March 2015. This episode is coming to you live, if you're listening on Friday evening in the UK times, or I think it's about midday in the US. So, we're trying something a bit different, doing a Motopod recording live. This is pretty much the same sort of way we'd do it if it were just Dave and I, or Len and I, or anyone chatting together. It's just that now we're broadcasting it live, so if you are listening live, you got to hear me mess up the intro once. So, hope everyone enjoyed that one. This show will be pretty much the same sort of thing, but if you have any questions that you want to tweet to us, or just tell us about as we're recording now, or any time in the future, be sure to tweet at @moto_pod or at @HLPhotoGP. After some interviews that we're playing, we'll go through some questions. If you are listening live, you can also go to the Mixlr chat room and chat there. I'm watching that on my iPad. Hopefully it works. It seems to work. So you can chat with me and chat with other people. Feel free to ask questions there. Also Twitter. Also the usual email address of motopod@motopodcast.com. We'll get some listener feedback in a second, but first we'll outline the interviews that we have for you this week. After a couple of dry weeks of interviews, we're back in a pretty big way. A huge thank you to Scott Bolton of Bench Racers International, as he got us two excellent interviews. One with JD Beach, who's a road racer and flat tracker. He was also a former Red Bull rookie, so the name may be somewhat familiar to everyone. And also Sammy Helbert, who is another flat tracker. So Scott Bolton has this to say on the pair. First with JD Beach. JD Beach rides for the Yamalube Graves Yamaha team and will compete this season in the newly restructured Supersport class in the AMA/Moto America. I'll take this as a chance now to say that Scott Bolton will also be with us at the Moto America rounds, getting some interviews for Motopod. So, keeping it nice and international on that front. On the Pro Road Racing series in 2014, JD Beach finished 5th in the final point standing on his Graves Yamaha R6 in the Daytona Sportbike class. He also races flat track whenever he gets the opportunity, and will race at the opening round of the AMA Pro Flat Track series at the Daytona Short Track this week. He had a solid top 10 finish in the Pro Singles Expert Main, which was the event that Scott Bolton was at the races at the OSP where Scott Bolton, interviewed him. If you're not familiar with JD, he has a mild speech impediment, but he has not let that hold him back one bit in his career, which makes him an inspiration to me and many others for the reason, along with just being a great kid in general. He has been mentored by Earl Hayden, Earl Racing's team, father of the Hayden Bros, in Kentucky, since moving to the East Coast from Washington several years ago. With a new crew chief and trainer, JD should be a solid contender for the inaugural Moto America Supersport title this season. An interesting side fact is that JD Beach is also quite a big training partner with Cal Crutchlow. They do a fair bit of flat track together, especially last year when Crutchlow goes over to America for some training. Obviously, America has a bit better weather than England does in the off-season. Now, moving on to Scott's thoughts on Sammy Helbert. AMA Pro Flat Track racer Sammy Helbert is one of the top riders in the AMA Pro Flat Track series, carrying the number 7 plate in the GNC1, brackets twins, class. He has raced the Troy Bayliss Classic the last 2 years, finishing in 5th place in this event. He beat Jared Mees for the win in the expert twins class at the race I attended at the half-mile Oglethorpe Speedway Park outside of Savannah, GA. I think GA is Georgia. I'm pretty sure it's Georgia. Sammy's brother, Jethro Halbert, races flat track as well, but was unfortunately injured last September at the Calistoga half mile. Jethro suffered a serious head injury and continues in a slow recovery to date. Sammy will no doubt be one of the defending GNC1 champion Jared Mead's main competitors for the title in 2015. So again, thanks to Scott for those two interviews. We also have the return of Jim Race. He and Peter Newell are chatting with James Witham, talking about BSB, World Superbike, and also the rights to minerals and sandstone in a quarry. So be excited for that one. Nice casual chat with them, but James brings up some excellent points and also has some more info on the new R1, which has started to come out in testing. So first things first, I guess, is this. So that is unfortunately not an alcoholic beverage, as I have to go to work, and I'm unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, a responsible person, so don't show up drunk. But that is, in fact, one of those fancy Valentino Rossi Monster Energy drinks. I saw a couple in Tesco the other day, so got one. And I thought I would save it for Motopod so that we can do a bit of a live tasting. I'm not sure this will make the main show when I edit it all together. But anyway, here goes. So we've obviously had the crack. We'll go for a bit of a smell test. Smells rather lemony. Usually I'm not a huge fan of the Monster. It seems a lot sweeter and maybe too sugary compared to the old Red Bull and Rockstar, rather. So hopefully this one isn't so bad. I guess here we go for a sip. Not as fizzy as I thought it would be. It's quite flat. I'm not sure if that's just because it was sitting in a Tesco back room for too long. But it tastes pretty okay. It basically tastes like Fanta, but like European Fanta, not like Australian and American Fanta. In Europe, Fanta is more of a soft orange, lemony colour, whereas in Australia and America, orange is a bright orange colour, and they have two very distinctive tastes. So if you've ever had European Fanta, that's what this Valentino Rossi branded Monster Energy drink tastes like. It tastes okay. It tastes better than normal Monster. Maybe I'll buy it if I see one again. I don't know. But anyway, back to the stuff we're here for, motorcycle racing. We'll start with some listener feedback. So just once again, that email is motopod@motopodcast.com. Feel free to write in, you know, any questions to the hosts. We had a lot of feedback about the getting young riders involved in racing segment. So we'll be sure to come back to that when we have some more hosts on. But just one or two quick questions now. One came in via Twitter from William McNeil, and that was, with Yamaha getting the full seamless shift gearbox, what's the next major advancement going to be for MotoGP machines? Now, this was a pretty interesting question. I thought about it pretty hard. I'm not quite Neil Spaulding in terms of technical advancements in MotoGP, but I think we're getting, yeah, it's hard to say where we go from here. There was an interesting thread on the MotoGP subreddit, reddit.com/r/MotoGP, where people asked the same question. And there was a separate thread where the idea of animated fairings essentially came up. So instead of the fairing just being carbon fiber covered with stickers, the fairing is, you know, it's carbon fiber and LEDs or some other form of animated board, so that you can have moving images on the side of the bike. You know, you can rotate sponsors. Now, it's a pretty interesting idea. I'm not sure how practical it would be. Obviously, things like LED lights and all the batteries and stuff, they add weight. And if you crash something like that, it's going to be a fair bit more expensive than just a bit of carbon fiber and a sticker. But I think that could be something cool. It also might be a bit dangerous. But yeah, I'm not really sure where it goes from here. I mean, with the spec electronics, we're obviously not going to, you know, electronics are going to change a bit, so it's not like they're going to get more advanced. Is automatic shifting a good idea? Probably not. I mean, you see in high level sort of racing that, you know, often people do it a bit better. You obviously have indicator lights and stuff to tell you when the ideal time is, but yeah, Yamaha have been playing around a bit with the rear brake as a finger brake over the clutch lever, as the clutch lever has obviously now become slightly less relevant. So maybe we see a shift from a foot rear brake to a finger rear brake. You know, fingers are obviously a bit more nimble, a bit more dextile than a foot. There are a lot of people that when there was that photo of Jorge trying out that finger brake, that it seemed a bit obvious to them that, you know, why would you ever try and brake with your clunky foot when you could try and do it with your fingers? So yeah, maybe we see something like that. But yeah, it's kind of hard, and a lot depends on the rules. I think that it'd take a rule change for us to see any huge steps in innovation. I think that maybe we see something different with the exhausts. I mean, exhausts have kind of been more or less the same for a fair bit, but yeah, not sure what we'll see there. But if you have any ideas on what you'd like to see or what you think might happen next in MotoGP, motopod@motopodcast.com. Be sure to send in some emails. So now for a tiny bit of news. There hasn't been too much news. Bit of a slow week. Obviously, testing gets back underway. Moto2, Moto3, I think they're at, I'm pretty sure it's Jerez. And then MotoGP in Qatar. We'll have Martin Darlington back with us on the ground in Qatar trying to get us some interviews from the test. So look forward to that next week. But just in the news, the JR Racing situation continues to devolve as, it's now pretty much confirmed that they won't be racing in World Superbike. There's a rumour that Artin Badovini could be joining Sylvain Barrier in the BMW Italia squad alongside him. The team principal and team manager basically said that we never got any money, and the whole thing has just kind of been a bad deal for almost everyone involved. Obviously, Artin Badovini and Tony Elias, you know, don't have rides for sure. Probably not good for Troy Corsa for his reputation. So, an unfortunately bad situation. Not quite as bad as the current situation in F1. Maybe we'll touch on that towards the end of the show if someone has a question on that, but rider contracts could be perhaps becoming a bit more binding after this weekend. So as I mentioned briefly before, the new R1 has finally started to go out and testing, and we haven't gotten too much from it. It was kind of a Yamaha-wide test. The World Endurance team was there alongside with the World Super Stock team and the BSB team. Basically, all that we've heard is that most of the riders were impressed with the bike, and of course they're going to be, because, Yamaha isn't going to let them say, oh, no, so it's absolutely terrible. But a lot of people were comparing it to a 600 in terms of the handling, so that'll be very interesting to see. Witham talks about the new R1 a bit in his chat with Jim and Peter, so be sure to listen to that in just a little bit. In some more BSB testing news, Graham Gowland, who is a title favourite for the British Supersport class, he's unfortunately broken his femur in a testing crash, but will hopefully, much like Shaky Byrne, try and be fit for the beginning of the season. And that's pretty much all the news we have. As I said, bit of a slow news week. There's been a couple of teams, you know, doing their unveiling. Pramac has a rather interesting tricolour type livery. The green that they had a couple of years ago with Caprossi and Depunier, along with the red and white that we've seen the last few years with Iannone riding for them. I'm personally not too big a fan of the bike, but as long as it's fast, who cares what it looks like. So with that, I think we will jump into some interviews. Unfortunately, I don't have the Motopod sound effects, so... View, view, view!
Okay, here in the back of the van with JD Beach, YES Yamaha road racer, and of course, flat tracker at heart. He's here running the 450 here at Oglethorpe Park Speedway. JD, good to see you, man. How's it going tonight?
Yeah, it's going real good. The weather is a lot colder than I was thinking it was going to be, but we've had one practice and the bike's working really good. I think I'm down a little bit on power, but I'm saving my good bike for the national next week down in Daytona. But no, I mean it's going really well, and I'm having fun, so I'm just hoping I can put it in the main tonight.
I assume you've raced here at Oglethorpe Speedway before?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I've heard some of the, you know, regular series guys say this is one of their favorite half miles in the country. Where does it rank on your list?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really cool track. I've never really had good luck here though, so it's weird. But I mean, the track's awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely a fast half mile. There ain't no doubt. You're saving your good bike for Daytona for the first round of the AMA Pro Series next week. How you feeling about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm feeling really good. I think I've got a really good bike to ride. My Yamaha 450 is running great, and I feel like I've got a good chance. I've been riding a lot of short tracks this winter, and I've always kind of liked the track down in Daytona. It's been quite a few years since I've raced there, but I'm feeling really good, and I think it's kind of nice for me because I'm not really going there for points or anything, so I can kind of go ride there and have more fun. And I think when I'm having fun, I ride a lot better.
Yeah, I can understand that. You never know what you're going to get at the track there in Daytona. It's definitely a kind of a multi-personality track.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I've seen guys there the first night win the main, and then the second night not even make the main. So I mean, it's definitely a crapshoot down there. But I mean, I'm just going down there as prepared as I can be, and we'll see.
I see where some more of the Kentucky contingent's going to be there. I guess Hayden Gillum, and I saw the other day where Jake Lewis is going down there with Roger Lee as his crew chief. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody, like all of us, just kind of grew up racing dirt track, and the way the road race season is, that this year we kind of got more of a chance to do it. And I think dirt track's starting to get bigger now with a lot of the top GP guys doing it. So I think a lot of the American road racers that started out dirt tracking and then kind of got away from it is doing it more, just because I think it really helps with bike control. But for me, I mean, I never really stopped racing dirt track once I started road racing.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, that's where some of this country's greatest champions have come that route, and definitely paying dividends for you on the road racing end. Speaking of the road racing, be getting started here in about a month at Austin for the inaugural Moto America round. How's your testing been going on the R6 so far?
Yeah, my Yamalu Graves Yamaha has been really good. I mean, our testing this year's been a lot better than last year, and I'm working with a new crew chief, Mike Canfield, and along with my trainer, Ty Cady. I mean, we've really stepped up my program, and I think this year's going to be a lot better, and definitely the couple tests we've had already, I feel great on the bike, and I'm having a lot of fun riding. So I mean, I'm just really looking forward to getting racing.
Yeah, and you know some of the I know some of your tough competition from last year's moved up to you know, the super stock class and superbike, Gagne and Westby and some of those guys. But then you got, you know, guys like Heron coming back in, and of course your teammate Garrett Gerloff, and obviously still a stacked field.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, there's definitely a lot of fast guys still in the super sport class, and it seems like, even though when people move up or go to different classes or different series, I mean, there's still always new guys that are coming in that are just as fast. So I mean, I definitely don't think it's gonna be a cakewalk, but I mean, I'm feeling really good, and I think we have a really good chance to be running up front every weekend.
Sounds good. I know you had a pretty good year last year. I know you had some tough luck, but we'd like to see you definitely be up there contending for podiums week in and week out this year. And what do you think about going to Austin, to the Circuit of America's track? Yeah, obviously nobody's really been there, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really cool. I mean, we're running with MotoGP at Austin and Indy, and then World Superbike at Laguna, so. I mean, I think it's really cool that we're going to new races and new tracks, and we're gonna get a race on a world stage, and I think a lot of us younger guys racing, we still have hopes and dreams of going to either World Superbike or MotoGP. So being able to race on the same weekend as them and the team seeing us, I think, is a good thing.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. I know, you know, that's Wayne Rainey and the Crave group. That's one of their main goals, is to get some of you guys back over there on the world stage. And, you know, obviously you've had to go in the Red Bull Rookie Cup. And yeah, that's what all of us, you know, American fans want to see. And hopefully hopefully that'll be the case. Obviously, that, I guess the news is Yamaha is coming back into World Superbike next year. So, yes, yeah, it's exciting, you know, exciting times.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Yamaha's really been pushing. I mean, MotoGP, the series here in America, now they're really pushing to put a good effort together for World Superbike. So, I mean, I think I'm and even they're wanting to get into some dirt tracks. So, I mean, I think I'm really in a great spot with Yamaha. I mean, they've got a fantastic road race bike, and they've got a great 450, and they're working on a twin for dirt tracks. So, I mean, I think it's a really good place for me to be at.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, speaking of that twin flat track, I was checking out Babe DeMay's FZ07 based machine over there in the pits earlier. That's looking pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I haven't got a chance to ride one yet, but I think from what I've heard, the frames are going to be really good, and the motors are real strong. So we'll just wait to see, I guess.
Sounds good. JD, I won't take up no more of your time. I know you're a busy guy, owner, crew chief, rider. So, but thanks so much for taking time out, man. We look forward to seeing you tonight and at the short track at Daytona next week, and then of course in the Moto America series coming up, and we'll see you later on in the season. Just wish you the best of luck. Thanks again.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
This is Scott Bolton for Moto Podcast here at the Oglethorpe Speedway Park just outside of Savannah, Georgia, and got the first race of the All-Stars National Series going on tonight, and a lot of the guys, AMA Pro guys, headed down to Daytona. Always stop here and kind of shake things down, and really pleased to be joined right now by none other than Slamming Sammy Halbert. Sammy, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. I'm happy to be here, and looking forward to getting some racing in.
Awesome. Sammy, I know last few years you've kind of been going on your own, you know, doing the team ownership deal, wrenching, riding and all that. This year you've got a deal put together for the Twins, for the Grand National Twins, with the Briggs Auto, Scott Power Sports Racing, and legendary tuner Johnny Goat on board with you. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited to be working with those guys. It takes a lot of weight off my shoulders. With running my own team was quite a lot to do, and takes away a little bit from the amount of training and riding I can do during the week. But and to have this opportunity to work with those people is really exciting for me, and it comes at a good time. So yeah, we're still really new to each other, but so far we've been working really well together. We practiced here this morning, and I felt really good. I went out behind Jared Mees one time and passed him, and so was feeling really good. So we'll just see how the racing goes. You know, it's just we're still kind of learning how to work with each other, but all good so far.
Sounds good. Let's see. Now, I guess if I understand it right, you got a Kawasaki and a Harley at your exposure there.
Yeah, disposal. Yeah. Yep, that's the plan. You know, these guys just want to win, and same with me. We're here to try and get some wins and hopefully go for that championship. So we'll have our pick with those two machines, and kind of ride whatever we feel is the best to be on. Right now, I'm riding the Kawasaki just because, you know, I've spent pretty much my whole career on a Harley, so I know how those work, and so I'm trying to understand how this other brand works. And so far so good. We'll keep plugging away and hopefully go in the right direction.
Good deal. So you'll be on the Kawi tonight. Yeah, I left up there passing the champ in practice. Man, that's a pretty good sign.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's just practice, but at least it tells you we're not way off the pace to start with. So yeah, that always feels good. We'll just you know, also I like the way that the bike comes off the line. So, you know, if we can get out front, hopefully we can finish up front.
No doubt. Listen, now in your singles 450 program, you're still doing your own deal with that on the Yamaha?
Yeah, we're still doing the Yamaha 450s, and we got a lot of good support from Fredericktown Yamaha and Vans Yamaha, and you know, those guys have been behind me for a long time, make it real easy to go racing on the Yamahas, and so and they work well for me, so I'm confident in that program as well.
Right. Well, sounds like a promising start of the year for you for sure. In the off-season, you got to go down under, I know, and play a little bit down at Troy Corser's race. Tell us a little bit about that. Did you go last year also, or was this your first year?
Yeah, so I went last year and this year to the Troy Bayliss Classic. And it's a good time, you know, go over there when it's our winter and their summer, so that's always a plus. And, you know, this year I didn't have a great result, but ended up fifth and had a good time, enjoyed the experience of it all, and learned some things that I made some changes actually when I got back here in the States, and got the Yamaha working a little better for me now. So so it was good, you know, it's a good experience. Troy's a great guy, and it's cool to kind of go mingle with all those top road racers and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm sure that was a great experience. What do you think about Troy Bayliss coming over and supposedly running some Grand Nationals this year?
Yeah, you know, that'd be great. Hopefully that happens. You know, I don't know if things are changing now that it looks like he's back on the World Superbike Racing Program. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that affects things. I would imagine it possibly could. So it's pretty cool that the old dude still got it. He's he's got some determination for sure. So either way, it'll be cool to watch and see what he does. But hopefully he makes it over here to do some flat track. I'm sure he will at some point, whether or not it's this year or next year with what he's got going in World Superbike. I'm sure he will. He definitely has the urge to do it. He's I think he wants to come over and see what he can do on the mile.
Yeah, he's definitely still got the he's definitely still got the fire in his belly, no doubt. Well, I know we got a riders meeting coming up soon, Sammy, so I don't want to keep you too long. I do want to say that we're all keeping your brother Jethro in our prayers. You know, we know he took a hard spell last year, and still coming back from that. So I know that's been tough on you and your family, but like I say, everybody's thinking and pulling for him. So just felt remiss if I didn't mention that.
Yeah, no, thank you. Jethro's a great guy. Everybody loves Jethro, so we're all pulling for him, and hopefully he can start making some bigger strides to getting better soon.
Definitely. Well, Sammy, thanks for taking time and talking to us here on Moto Podcast, and man, hope for the best for you tonight, and I'd like to see you get off on the right foot with your new team. Best wishes the Daytona Short Tracks coming up next week and for the rest of the season. Thanks a lot, Sammy.
All right, thank you.
Jim. Yo, wait, what's up?
You kind of sound like Jack, dude.
Yeah, well, I've just had a bit of a cold all week. I mean, I haven't felt so bad, but just like coughing. And you know what it's like in England, we get cold weather and that.
Hey,
all part of the fun.
I've got a mate here with me who races CRMC. He's a U.S. guy. I'm actually in California at the moment. But he comes over for every CRMC race. I want to so here's what I want to talk about. I want to ask your thoughts on World Superbike for this year. But he follows BSB way more. He's way smarter about it than I am, and he's got a couple of questions. So you want to do that?
Yeah, go.
All right. Well, okay. So I'm going to ask you the most general friggin' question there is. What do you think about WSB this year? And on top of that, you have to answer the Bayliss question.
Right, so WSB, lots of rule changes. Has it worked? We've had one round, and for me, possibly the technical regulation changes have leveled the playing field somewhat. I still think that the Aprilia possibly has a little bit of a speed advantage. I think the Honda's a little bit keener in straight line speed than what it was last year compared to the others. So that's probably worked. And Philip Island was just a brilliant meeting, really exciting racing, lots of manufacturers up front, lots of people you didn't expect up front. Most impressive person of the weekend, notwithstanding one of my best mates is Leon Haslam, and I was really pleased to see him taking a win and a second. But probably the most impressive rider of the weekend was one of the new ones, which was Michael van der Mark. He was really impressive. I mean, really impressive. And I think he got it into his head that he wasn't going to be bullied, you know, and he stuck his nose in there and he pushed. And Torres. I mean, Torres, all the new guys were really, really good. And I think that, you know, it's the writing's on the wall, really, for the others. They're going to be up front most of the year. Like I say, I think the Aprilia is possibly going to be the most competitive bike this year. Little bit disappointed for Gintole. I feel that he is not going to be a benefit from the fact he's a world champ. And I get the feeling it's probably going to be his last chance at being world champ. And I like the bloke. He's a lovely, lovely lad. He's Sylvain. Other than that, it was a brilliant meeting. That said, Phillip Island tends not to be a sort of benchmark for the rest of the season. You know, we've had it before where oddball bikes have gone really well. Last year, the Suzuki went really well. Alex Lowe's was quick this year until things started going wrong.
You know, I walked into the weekend and I was trying to figure out who I was going to do for my fantasy league picks. And I went with Alex and Tom. And while they figured up there, they weren't in the hunt, really.
No. Well, Tom had a lot of bad luck, really. And Tom, I've spoke to Tom a couple of times afterwards, and he was a little bit miffed about Van der Mark running him onto the stripe. And Tom really did feel like he could have won both races. He said he definitely had the speed. It was things that worked against him, really. He said that he's not disappointed coming away from Phillip Island, is it, Tom? He still says he's going to be in the hunt for the championship, which Tom Sykes never has a bad meeting. I mean, that's about as bad as you're going to get with Tom, you know, the first round, because he just doesn't. He brings it home, any conditions. If he doesn't win, he finishes second or third or whatever he can. You know, his consistency tends to carry him through. So I still think Tom is going to be a championship threat. I firmly believe Jonathan Rea is going to be a championship threat. I think he's clicked with the Kawasaki. I think he believes he can do it.
I am absolutely impressed at how quick out of the box that he came on that Kawi. You know, granted, we knew it was going to be a good bike, but I was wondering if Johnny was going to be able to make that transition that quick from what was, if you think about it, and admit it, my friend, the Honda was a bit...
What you tended to think was the Honda worked really well for him, but was a little bit slow and suited some tracks better than others. And you wondered whether he were going to jump on somebody else's bike, which is Tom Sykes' bike is at Kawasaki. There's no question of that. He's done all the development. You know, his geometry and setup and everything else. And he loves it. I mean, he's got a smile on his face all weekend as Jonathan. So I think Jonathan's going to be a championship threat. And maybe I'm trying to decide whether the newcomers can actually mount a championship campaign, or whether they're going to be fast some places and not so quick in others.
How deep do you think the field is this year compared to some other years?
I think it's good. I think the technical regulations have made it a little bit more of a level playing field. I think that's going to make it good racing. I still think that on the faster of the circuits, the Aprilia is possibly going to have an advantage. I'd love to say that my championship favourite was Liam Haslam because you
go trials riding with him and you get money and you drop pints. But I mean,
not only that, you know, from going testing at the end of November last year, he really sees himself as he thinks this is his last big chance to win the championship. And he's trained hard, he looks thin, he looks, you know, lean and fit and focused. And I've never seen him looking as focused and as up for it. And maybe he's got the package to do it this year.
So he spent 2 years trying to get his leg healed. Is he fully fit on that front?
He's fully fit. He's no aches, pains, no pins, no plates, no nothing. It's the first time for 3 years he started the season fully fit and bang up for it. And I think with Leon, it seems more mental when I talk to him. You know, he genuinely thinks he's got a good chance. He says the bike, electronically, it's like riding a blooming... It's like being on a PlayStation game. It just works. You know, you go into a corner, it turns, you open the throttle and it goes. He says you don't have to think too much about what it's going to do or what it isn't going to do. You just ride it. And that's, you know, it's a good place to be.
Cool. So we're heading to Thailand now, a track that nobody knows. I don't even think anybody's even practiced there. They may have done some like test laps or something like that, right?
I don't think many of them have done anything around there. I've actually managed to winkle out a lad who's done some laps
around there. What the hell kind of Brit term is winkle?
Winkle. It's, you know, if you pull a winkle is it's a seashell that has something in you can eat, right? So you pull a winkle out of the sea and you have to poke it out. It's like a muscle type thing. So what I mean is I've winkled out, I've rooted around and found somebody, right, who's ridden the place. And it just turned out that it was Neil McKenzie's son, Taylor.
Yeah, Taylor, yeah.
And Taylor says, the first half of the lap's brilliant. The second half lap's all second gear. And there's going to be no overtaking for the last. He says it's not going to be a brilliant World Championship track, but the facility's fantastic. So we'll see. I do think it's going to be a level playing field. I think it's going to be great to see, you know, Bayliss going there and not having to sort of catch up, having not practiced. I think that Bayliss might have a little bit of a do there. But well, I was really impressed.
And on top of that, we don't really know, but tires may not be the same kind of issue they had at PI.
Well, maybe not. Well, nobody knows. That's the point. And Pirelli's not tested there, so that might be a bit of
They haven't even put a tire on track there yet.
I've heard not, but don't quote me on it.
Okay.
You're quoted.
they never
went to Phillip Island and tested it once they'd resurfaced it, and that's why all the troubles occurred a couple of 3 years ago, you know.
Yeah. Okay, before I hand it over to Pete, because he's got some great questions for you, what the hell have you been up to? What have you been doing, mate?
Oh, I bought myself a new trials bike, so I've been doing some trials events. I'm doing a national trial on Sunday, which is, to be honest, a little bit out of my league, but I like a challenge.
What bike did you get?
A Sherco. I bought a 300 Sherco because I know the importer really well and I get a really nice sort of discount. So
it's a really, that's a really grunty 252 stroke, right?
It's a 300 two stroke, and whatever trials bike I buy, it's always going to be better than me. So it doesn't matter. I can buy whichever one I want. It's going to be so much better than I am. So I get a deal on a Sherco. So, and I've also, I bought a couple of three racing bikes this last,
really?
2 months. I bought a TZ 350 and two 250s. I bought an F 350F. I bought the first of the Delta Box 250s, which is a 86S, and I've bought an 88 reverse cylinder. So all from Japan. So I'm on with them.
I believe I'm going to have to come over and test out the runways at Crosley Moor.
Yeah, you can. In fact, I'm going to take it to some track days if you want to tie it in. You can come and have it, because I've decided that I'm going to do at least two of them with new cranks and, well, certainly new rods and new mains and new pistons. So I'm not scared of running them, you know. I'm not going to run old cranks and have them throwing through the flipping cases. So yeah, they'll be runners.
Your Sherco, you know, it was funny, about a month ago I was looking at Google Maps and I was doing the satellite view and I was looking at Crosley Moor. And I'm like, you've got a fucking quarry there. You've got a quarry.
Yeah, there's a big quarry. When you come in to land in your aeroplane, it's a bit of a... It focuses your attention, they'll tell you. We've got a big hole next to us.
And so do you, you know, grab those big chunks of granite or whatever it is and turn that into the trials training camp?
No, what happened was... I basically sold the mineral rights to the local quarry, and what they're after, what they do is basically dig out the stone and then put all the shit back in, regrass it, and then give it me back. So it's like a win-win, really.
But I noticed from the Google Maps satellite photo that they're basically trundling across your taxiway.
No, not anymore. They're not. No, they're all in the top side now. That must be an old Google Maps thing. So they're all on the north side now. What they're after, it's a company that's local, a really good company, and they're after sandstone. It's the finest sandstone in Britain at the moment, is that. It's lovely stuff.
All right. Is that what you're building your walls out of?
Yeah, well, I can have as much wall in stone as I want off them, so yeah, good.
All right, Mr. Whittem, and I rarely call you that, this is Mr. Pete Newell. He is number 44 in the CRMC, flies from San Francisco to the UK for every round and flies back home again. Pete?
James.
Hi, Pete.
This has been a really banner year for Superstock with a whole new pool of promotees going up into Superbike. How do you rate the new riders?
What, in BSB?
In BSB, right. I'm thinking Danny Buck.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, your main man really, is really Danny Buchan, for my money. What we've got this year in BSB is the most competitive as far as in terms of depths of field I've ever seen. It's incredible. People coming back from World Supersport, World Superbike. We've got people like Jack Kennedy, who's a really good rider. He's back in there. People moving up some Stock 6 from Super Stock, 1000 from Super Sport, like Taylor McKenzie. There's so many good riders. It's not going to be easy to finish in top 15 this year in BSB at all.
Yeah, I agree. My dark horse, I think, is Lee Jackson riding for Build Base. I think he's going to benefit from being around Keo. How do you rate him?
Yeah, I love Lee. He's just the nicest man you'll ever meet. Have you met him?
Oh, absolutely. I met him as a lad, believe it or not, at Croft. And he was still doing the Aprilia Super Teens.
Right, when he was about 14 or 15. Yeah.
And he just came over to talk to me on his own, which I thought, you know, for a young lad, to a complete stranger, was really quite something. You wouldn't see something like that in the States.
Oh, he's a lovely bloke. BMW gave him a car last year as part of his package, right?
Yeah,
sweet.
And this is just an indication of how he is. And when he gave it him back at the end of the year, the BMW man, I know him really well, the BMW PR man, he said, oh, he brought his car back and it was full of fuel. It was clean. He backed it out. It had an air freshener in it, and he's the nicest lad. He's not a typical bike racer, but he's brilliant. He's intelligent, he's fast, and I think you're right. I'd love to see him going well.
Yeah, and a licensed electrician as well. He's covered all of his bases.
Yeah, that's right.
So he's got something to fall back on. Have you heard any buzz from Milwaukee on the new R1 and their development process? Anything going on there?
Yeah, I think that the bikes have been a little bit later than what they thought. The development's a little bit behind what they thought. The big question mark on the Yamaha is not Superstock. I think in Superstock trim, it's going to have 198 of the rear wheel bog stock. And the electronics are perfect. A few of us have ridden them now, and they're brilliant. I think the problem's going to be controlled ECU in BSB. I think a Superstock trim, R1, is going to be, in a lot of ways, electronically more advanced than the Superbike. So I think the problem is going to be getting them to go without all the standard stuff on. But I haven't heard that much from Milwaukee, to be honest. I can't see it being... I think they're going to do well to hit the ground running and win races straight away, but I think it's going to be a good bike.
James, Jim here. I talked to Josh Hayes last night because they're in a transition year and they're trying to kind of sort of unify the rules between AMA, BSB, and all that. Right now,
World Superbike, yeah.
Yeah, they've still got Magnani Morelli with all, you know, the top team, Graves Yamaha, and him being the national champ.
Yeah.
It would be very interesting next year when things are on a level playing field. And I have a feeling, I don't know if you see the same thing, that we may see more American riders coming over.
That'd be perfect for me. I mean, to be honest, one of the problems with World Superbike in the last few years has been lack of international diversity, if you like. There's been not much by way of Americans running at the front, not even that many Spanish riders. It's been lots of Brits, lots of Italians, and that's been kind of it. Not even any, you know, that many sort of front-running Australians, really. So I'd love to see different manufacturers and nationalities in there.
Do you think that Josh Brooks has gotten rid of the stigma that he had when he took Wintoli out and kind of put him in a bad spot?
Yeah, I think he's lost the stigma of being a kind of little bit kind of dangerous. He had that thing at Mallory where he knocked several people off the air thing. But most of Josh's early kind of misdemeanors when he was Bad Boy Brooks was down to the fact he was trying so hard and didn't really know the circuits that well and was pushing at the front. But what he's a weird bloke, is Josh, in that he's very determined, doesn't ever look happy about anything. Towards the end of last year, he said he's going to leave the UK. He's had enough of BSB. He's going to World Superbike. And then his deal fell through and he's back in BSB. And I just question whether he's got the sort of stick and lift, as it were, to win the championship. I hope he has. He's a determined bloke. I like how he goes about his business. He's got the best looking girlfriend in the paddock, which is always a plus.
Well, then he wins by default at that point, right?
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely points for me, definitely. but I still think, looking at all the BSB, looking at the grid, the two favourites, standout men this year, are going to be Keo and Shikiman. Although Shane Burns, I talked to him actually yesterday, and he's got pins and screws and wire in his hand. He's made a little bit of a mess of his hands down there in Spain testing. So he reckons he's going to be fine and fit and healthy for the start of the championship. We've still got 4 weeks left yet before Donington. So, but he's made a little bit of a mess of himself. But for me, all things being equal,
have you talked to him since he had that accident and fucked his hand up?
Yeah, I talked to him yesterday. Yeah.
Okay, what does he personally think his recovery period is going to be like?
No, he says no problem. I mean, he's a typical bike rider. it's not a problem. I've had it pinned, I've had it plated, I'm back at the circuit, I've been flipping out with a stopwatch watching other people, and I'll be back on a bike, and, you know, just not a problem. I mean, we know he bounces back well. Anybody who's been at his level for as long as he has, that's the balance, you know yourself.
I'm guessing Shane is not the give me an injection kind of guy. He just kind of goes for it. So before I hand it back to Pete, because I know he's got a couple more questions. So we now get BSB over here in the States. Granted, it's like 6 to 8 months later, but we do get the full season. And Pete had been watching that, which is funny because you race on those tracks. And then I showed him Eurosport the other day, and all we get is the race. We don't get the grid walk. And the grid walk that you do is like, it makes the entire broadcast. Tell me about that, and then Pete's got a couple more for you.
Yeah, well, I mean, the grid walk for me, I got really fed up of watching grid walks where the grid walk person typically didn't have a lot of knowledge of bikes, and we're going up to people and saying, you know, what's your setup like, how you feeling, blah, blah. And that's fine. I mean, you get a little bit of an insight, but not much. But I thought, they know me well enough, and hopefully with enough respect, that I can actually get in and about, you know, and ask them some things, have a bit of a laugh sometimes. But what you have to do, you've got to know them that well that you know what person to ask which question. You know that, you know, Billy McConnell is so focused that he will not answer properly. He'll just look straight through you and keep in the zone. But you know that somebody like Dan Linfoot will have a bit of a chat.
Did you ever do grid walks on World Superbike?
Yeah, I've done about 4 or 5 and got really short-shifted, really. I did. Obviously, the Brits will all talk to me. But I remember going up about 3 or 4 years ago. I went up to Biagi on the Donington grid live. It was live. And I went up to him, and he wouldn't even say, because if any rider says to me, I walk away, I understand. But he just didn't speak. He didn't even look at me. He just put his hand in an open palm right in my face, like within a millimetre of my nose. And I thought, I'm not having that. I don't like that. And I had to kind of walk away with my tail between my legs. So I got less sort of joy with the World Superbike grid, but British Superbike, I know them all really, really well, and I know what to ask who and what I can say to each rider.
James, with the conclusion of BSB testing in Spain, we obviously Shakey's grabbing the headlines. Have you seen anything unusual come out of that in terms of performance?
Not really. I've got the usual feedback of everybody's going quick, everybody can't wait for the season to start, blah, blah. It's all, you know, it's all positive. You're never going to get anybody who puts any kind of news out this time of year that says, oh, we're struggling, the bike's a load of shit. You know, they're never going to say that. So it's all kind of upbeat at the minute. To me, I mean, going testing in Spain, that's fine, you know, but it seems to be so obsessive now. They spend all winter there, some people. Danny Buchan's been there all winter. And you just think, hang on, the first meeting is at Donington, second week in April. It's going to be wet, cold, slippery, and all your testing in Spain is going to count for absolutely zilch to me. But anyway, you know, they're out there and testing, and I haven't heard anything come back, really. Even Shaky was being quite guarded as to what times people had done and all that. So, I mean, for me, it's not irrelevant, but it's a little bit irrelevant. You know, once we get to Donny and we'll find out.
Oh, who's the BSB Eurosport crew for this year for the announcers?
Same again, me and James Aidan as pundit, Matt Roberts as presenter, and Jack Burnicle, aided by Barry Nutley for the sort of lead commentator. It's the same thing, really good. The only difference this year is we've been told we don't have to wear Eurosport shirts, we can wear his own gear, which is really good, because the other ones didn't fit so well.
It never slowed down Hayden.
No, well, Hayden's the right close horse. He thinks he's the trendiest man in the world, so he didn't like wearing the corporate stuff.
Well, yeah, you and Jack, has Jack ever talked retirement?
No, he would never retire. He loves it. Last year, when he didn't do World Superbike, it was a personal blow to him. He loves it. And in fact, I really enjoyed sitting back in with him in World Superbike myself. Steve was really good last year, but I didn't know him as well as I know Jack. And I know that if I say something a bit quirky, Jack will pick up on it and go with it. And, you know, I'm a lot more familiar with Jack, really, than I was with Steve.
I suspect the only way that you could get Jack to retire would be to strap him into your plane and be like, fuck this.
Yeah, or, yeah, some kind of lobotomy type thing and put him in a home, I think.
Yeah, with the season starting with probably Shaky not up to par, are you handicapping any surprises for Donington? I know that Craner Curves is going to be very exciting in the wet, and there'll be a lot of drama there.
Yeah, you know Craner yourself. I mean, Craner Curves is a brilliant piece of track, but that left-handed Craner, what they say is, if you do any racing for more than a couple of three seasons in Britain, you've either crashed there or you're going to crash there. Everybody has. It's going to catch you out. What it is there, any sun that gets on it, it's sometimes more dangerous, a left-handed Craner, when it's not wet, because in the wet, you respect it. When it's dry but cold, it doesn't get any sun because it faces away from the sun, because it's actually facing north, is that bit of track, the camber. So you go down Craner, you turn right, you flick it left, you go onto a colder piece of track and you go down. So yeah, it's going to be hectic. There's going to be 25 decent riders out there trying to sort of live up to the bullshit they've been telling us all winter, so I can't wait for it.
Yeah, I remember Eugene Laverty's off there in the World Superbike, and it catches out even the best riders. My own experience was it was more like a motorway on-ramp covered with grease.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
So, James, we've probably jammed up most of your evening. Tell me about the weather there.
No, it's been really bad, but it's looking up this week. It feels really spring-like. I've got a big trial on Sunday. It's 8 hours in the saddle. Well, it would be 8 hours in the saddle, but trials bikes don't even have saddles anymore, so it's 8 hours on your pins. And it's going to be early summer weather. It's going to be 13 degrees and T-shirt, so I'm looking forward to that. But it has been. It's been a cold winter, really, but it's been all right, you know. It's all part of the rich tapestry.
Oh, my God. I think I'm going to excerpt that and use it as part of our outro. The rich tapestry of the UK. Do you feel like this building anticipation, because as we get closer and closer and closer to the start of not only short circuits, but real roads, it's like, oh, shit, here we go again.
Yeah, a little bit. We've got a planning meeting for the TT in a couple of weeks, 14th and 15th of March. We've got a big planning meeting in London about how we're going to do it, and they're having a big press launch at the RAC Club, which is really posh. down in the Strand, I think it is. That's all started to become a little bit more sort of visible and upcoming. The roads are going to be really interesting this year.
The TT this year is what, you, Steve, and Tony?
Yeah, it's exactly the same, yeah. Me, okay. Two Steves, and Craig Doyle again, which is brilliant. Okay. The TT is going to be fantastic. You've got lots to talk about there. Guy Martin is going to be on BMWs. That's going to be a brilliant bike. It's possibly going to be his last TT, so he might not do it again. That's big for the...
James, between you, me, and everybody that's listening to this, I think he's full of shit. It's just...
Well, no, to be honest, he's not. He is a little bit. He doesn't need to do it. He's fast enough to win a TT if people break down. He's not fast enough to go and win it on his own sort of merit. But that's not to say he won't. I've seen people win TTs that are not that quick on the day. People have broke down and, you know. Still, for me, the man to beat around there is going to be Michael Dunlop on the Yamaha. The fact is, you give him a bike that's got 200 horsepower, it doesn't matter if it's got square wheels. He will wrestle it into some kind of shape and get it around.
But, I mean, he has changed his riding over the last couple of years on the real roads. He went from being somebody that you were just waiting to crash to, I mean, two mornings ago, I think, we were watching last year's Southern 100, which was a bit of a fright fest. But Michael's riding now is light years different than it was 2 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, 3 years ago when I watched him, before every single race he went out in, I was nearly ringing the florist and ordering a wreath. I mean, it was one of them. You just thought, oh, my God, I don't even want to watch it because I've got a really bad feeling about this. You know, bouncing off curbs, taking off in the wet on that 600 when he first won a TT and making people like Hutchinson and McGuinness look daft.
Yeah, no.
You know, that was risking it because you slide off in the wet at Donington, you get up, you walk back. You slide off in the wet at the Isle of Man, it's not going to be good.
Yeah.
So, he's smoother and he can ride a bike. There's no question. He's actually quite quick on the short circuits as well when he gets going.
He still can't. One of the very few Irish riders I still can't understand when I have a chat with him. I was talking to Michael.
you cannot. You don't understand him at all. He's one of them riders. He can win a TT, right? He'll work on his own bikes. And if you want some tarmacking doing on your drive, he'll do that as well.
You know who I was talking to the other day, who sounds like he's near full fit, is Gary Johnson. He is ready to go. I guess he's going to do a couple of short circuit races this year too, but sounds like, and some people have been giving him a stick, I hear online Smith was giving him a stick for supposedly.
Smith's, basically what happened was, I mean, I've got both sides of the story. Smith wanted him to ride their bike. He won on the 6M5 last year. Brilliant. They love him for that. And it's a good bike and he wanted to ride it. But he saw himself as worth quite a lot of money, so he asked for quite a lot of money. They couldn't afford to pay him. They said, we'll pay you X. He wanted Y. They couldn't meet in the middle. And then it got come to the point where they needed to get other people on it because they were going to run out of people to put on it. So they got Dave Johnson and... who else did they get on it? They've got Dave Johnson and... Anyway, they've got Dave Johnson as their main rider. Might even be Guy Martin. It is Guy Martin. Yeah. Guy Martin and Dave Johnson. The news then was, poor old Gary Johnson. But then we heard that he'd asked for a ton of money and then didn't have a bike. And then you start thinking, maybe it's a bit six and two threes. You know, so I don't know what's quite going on, but I know they've fallen out.
Yeah.
I've seen some of the press releases and it's kind of thinly veiled sort of sniping.
I totally cracked up in the late fall because I saw, you know, in the Brit press, I'm like, Michael Dunlop doesn't have a ride for 2015. And a lot of my mates over here in the States were like, oh, my God, Michael doesn't have a ride. I'm like, hold on.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. This is just.
Who's not going to give him a ride? Michael Dunlop is pretty much, if you give him a decent bike, no matter what color it is, it's almost a guaranteed win in the week, you know, and that's worth a lot to some people. You know, there's no way he would have ended up without a ride. Absolutely not.
I was totally laughing because I saw people freaking out. I'm like, just wait a week until the next article comes out and we'll...
Yeah.
All right, mate. Listen, again, thank you so much for your time. Thank you, Pete, for having the opportunity to talk to James. You going to make it over here this year?
I would love to do, but probably not. I've got quite a demanding daughter that's now into horses. It's costing me a fortune, and I've got trials in to do, and I want to do a bit of CRMC. I bought myself a TZ 250, a nice one. I'm going to try and race that a bit this year, so possibly not. See you in a bit.
Bye, Pete. Cheers.
Happy.
And we're back. Thanks to Jim and Pete for that interview. And yeah, I guess that we'll get into some questions from the chat and from Twitter. So once again, if you have any questions, at @moto_pod on Twitter, motopod@motopodcast.com for any longer questions. Or if you're listening in live, be sure to type anything into the Mixlr chat. So I can't remember who it was, but towards the start of the show, someone asked about the opinions on the new Honda BSB livery. I'll whack a link in the show notes to that if you haven't seen a photo of it. But yeah, I think it's okay. It's nothing really outstanding. It's you know, pretty simple and a bit plain, I guess, compared to some of the other ones. But yeah, it's not offensively bad, and it's not really outstandingly good. It's just kind of average. We talked a bit a while ago about the LCR livery and how it's mostly white, and I was kind of pretty excited by it at the time. But the more I kind of look at it, especially Cal's bike seems to be a bit blander than Miller's. Cal's mainly sponsored by CWM, or is it CMW? Either way. Whereas Miller has Givi as a title sponsor, and Miller's bike seems to have a bit more colour on it. Cal's bike's a bit bland, unfortunately. So, yeah, the Honda BSB livery is okay. It's better than that Urban Tiger thing that everyone seems to like, but I personally really, really don't like it. Next question. Scott Dixon, what's Hopper doing this year? This was a question I was actually thinking to myself when I was walking to uni this morning. Towards the end of last year, I seem to vaguely remember hearing a rumour that Hopper would be back in BSB with a different team, but it doesn't look like Hopper will be one of the, you know, 40 million riders on the BSB grid this year, unfortunately. He obviously had a hugely difficult season last year in BSB after being, you know, supremely successful the first round, the first time he went at BSB. You know, he obviously started the season off a bit unfit, I think is being reasonable to say, but then he got his fitness back, but the bike never really came together with Hopper, and they never really got any super strong results like they'd seen in years previous. Yeah, I don't know, lots of people theorise that, you know, Hopper needed electronics to ride the bike, that he was so used to riding MotoGP bikes with a lot of electronics that the new BSB rules, as James Witham and Jim chatted about, you know, the different levels of electronics on the BSB, that there's, you know, a huge reduction that could affect the R1. I think that it affected Hopper in kind of a similar way, in that he really struggled with that and didn't get to grips with it. Maybe also lost a bit of confidence as a result of that and was just kind of a downward spiral. But in terms of what Hopper's doing next year, haven't even really seen a tweet out of him in forever. It kind of just seems like he's vanished from the face of the earth, unfortunately. Yeah, I'm not sure what Hopper's doing. Hopefully he's racing somewhere, but, you know, he has a kid now. Maybe it's time he opens up a riding school or something and, you know, settles into life a bit slower, keeps the rest of his fingers. And yeah, if I do find out any news about Hopper, we'll be sure to share it on the show. Now to some Twitter questions. The first is a four-part question from Daniel Wainwright. It starts, please help me. I used to be a MotoGP addict. I just can't get excited about it anymore. Another season of Marc Marquez beating whoever else is on the factory Honda or Yamaha, mostly Jorge Lorenzo, despite all the bluff and buster, neither Ducati or Suzuki are going to be competitive, particularly for a win. Aprilia say they know it will take 3 years to be competitive. Aprilia have never been competitive in MotoGP, so how would they know? I want to be excited, but just can't. Please help. So that's a very interesting question. Kind of the same sort of thing happened to a lot of people when Casey Stoner was dominating, especially when on the Honda, that lots of people, you know, lost interest. I think that hasn't happened quite as much with Marquez, because Marquez is a bit more of a personality than Casey Stoner was. Certainly one criticism that Casey Stoner got a lot was that he perhaps wasn't a, well, he was a personality, but maybe not the personality that everyone wanted. But how to get excited about MotoGP again? I think this season, if you're bored by Marquez dominating, I think that this season might not be the season to try and come back to it. I think that, as we've said before, I think that next year will represent a much bigger challenge, much closer racing, especially with the tyre changes and the spec electronics. This year, I don't know. I mean, personally, I could watch Casey Stoner in just practice sessions, especially around Phillip Island. And much the same with Marquez, just how they ride the bike is so unique, especially Marquez. Marquez is on the limit and getting crossed up and going up and down the curbs. And it's just incredible to watch, you know, Marquez basically drift around a corner with the elbow down. Where was it? I think it was the Barcelona race last year when it was Marquez, Pedrosa and Rossi all battling for the lead together. And they were going around, I think it's the big turn 10. I think that's the big long left-hander, and they were going up onto the rumble strips and kicking up paint chips, and it's just you seem to get a lot more shots like that where just these incredible things happen. And yeah, I don't know, to be honest, the racing last season was a lot closer and a lot better, I think, than we've seen for at least a couple of years in GP, and hopefully we can have that again. I mean, you have Jorge Lorenzo, who's, you know, come back super fit. There's still that question of the mental block that Lorenzo has about Assen and the rain there. But I think that Lorenzo will be back stronger. Rossi's refound motivation, and I think he'll be very strong. You know, Danny Pedrosa is always kind of a silent threat. Will Pedrosa challenge for the title? Probably not. But he'll certainly, you know, challenge for race wins and be consistently on the podium. So, yeah, I think it'll still be an interesting season, no doubt. But if you really want to get back into MotoGP, certainly start watching, you know, Moto3 and Moto2. As we've said, especially Moto3, such close racing. And it's all these kids who have everything to prove and probably everything to lose, but they don't see it as having everything to lose. So, you know, you just see crazy racing, and hopefully we'll have that keep up next year as well. So now another question. Someone asked, will it be the best season ever? Probably. As I said, I think that the fight for the championship is going to be a lot closer than it was last year, at least hopefully. And yeah, I think that we'll have a very strong season. I think that Moto2 will be a lot closer, at least based on testing, hopefully. Because Moto2, at times, was a touch boring, in my opinion, last year. And then again, I think that Moto3 will be incredible. As we've said a lot, Fabio Quartararo will be one to watch. He's going to be incredible. I think that there's a very strong chance that he could take the championship in his first year. Riders like Danny Kent will obviously present a strong challenge. Then you have guys like Efren Vazquez and Lexi Masbu, who are super experienced, but do have kind of a tendency to blow hot and cold, which can be unfortunate, especially in Moto3, when you really do need to be finishing every race and kind of finishing top five, as we saw with Maverick Vinales when he took his victory there. So now I'm just going to quickly scroll through the Mixlr chat to see if there are any questions. Edwin Hazer has just chimed in with, I kind of expected more from Luis Salom in Moto2. Any ideas? So, I don't know. Lots of people seem to like Luis Salom. I think he's a bit of a drama queen, as we've seen from some of his crashes. I think it was at Bruno that he had the very spectacular one, where he crashed, then got up, then jumped down, and he seemed to do more damage to the bike and himself in his post-crash tantrum than the actual crash. I think that Luis Salom is a very mental rider. Not like mental isn't crazy, but like he's a lot more reliant on his mental state than say other riders. And he has maybe a bit like Sete Gibernau back in the Rossi days, where he lets things get to him a bit more, and that affects him a lot more than other riders. You know, you have Marquez, who basically nothing seems to faze Marquez. He's always happy. He's always smiley. You know, when Marquez almost went blind at one point, and he's, you know, he seems to not really let that worry him too much. Whereas I think Luis Salom comes off as a very emotional rider, and that maybe it's that kind of mental block that Salom struggled with. Jonas Folger, in an interview with Crash.net, talked a lot about how Folger had a strong start to the season, but then dropped off a bit mid-season, and that kind of killed his confidence for the latter half of the season. And I think that a lot of that same sort of thing could have happened with Luis Salom last year. Both Folger and Salom had pretty strong starts to the season. Salom was on the podium, I think it was in Argentina. Hopefully he can come back. I mean, he looks stronger in testing, and Alex Rins will certainly motivate Luis Salom. Luis Salom is kind of in this weird stage where, You know, you have guys like Vinales who are younger than him moving up to MotoGP, and, you know, Salom was racing in 125s at the same time as Marquez, and you've had him, you know, advance through him, and then you've had guys like Rins who are now at the same stage as Luis Salom. And I think that that'll hopefully motivate Salom to, you know, to get a giddy up on, really keep pushing, because as we've seen in Moto3, you know, he was challenging for a title, not just on the KTM, but on the Calyx KTM in that first year. He was maybe not challenging a title, but he was certainly challenging top three. So Salom can do it. I think that he just needs to overcome that mental block. And we have got a couple more questions in. One from Wiggy-san, fan of the show, fan and friend of the show. Quick question, does anyone think Bautista deserves another year in GPs? Personally, I don't know. Bautista's kind of one of those guys who, he's a strong rider, but not a great rider. He's kind of like a budget version of Andrea Dovizioso. Maybe that's a bit harsh. I mean, he's still good, you know, he has multiple podiums in MotoGP. But I think that he'll do well for Aprilia in what they're looking to do. I think that having ridden the Suzuki and ridden the Honda in MotoGP is that he'll be able to help Aprilia develop that bike a bit. And after that second year, I don't know if he'll still have a ride. It's kind of hard to say. Yeah, I'm not sure about Bautista. Another question from Wiggy-san. What's going on with Marco Melandri? Again, I don't know. It seems almost certain now that Melandri will be sticking with Aprilia. A couple of shows ago, thought that we probably wouldn't even see him at Qatar. He seemed so depressed, but he was at the Aprilia team launch. So yeah, he's at least sticking around. But it kind of comes back to that thing of an unhappy rider's and not a confident rider, and not a confident rider is slow and also dangerous. So I'm not sure. We'll be I'm not sure what we'll see from Melandri. Hopefully, he can sort it out. I mean, look back to Melandri, you know, one-handed drift out of the final turn at Phillip Island, you know, peak of the career to this. It's harsh. Wally D1, Walid 1, maybe that's pronounced, I don't know, has a question. Do I think Biaggi will wildcard in MotoGP? No, I don't think Biaggi will wildcard in MotoGP. Maybe in World Superbikes, but that rumor seems to ebb and flow a fair bit. Max Biaggi's a MotoGP legend, which I think technically rules him out of any wild cards. I seem to remember asking this to, or talking about this with someone a while ago, and they brought up how once you're inducted into the MotoGP Hall of Fame, is that rules you out of ever racing again. But as we've seen, the rules can sometimes be a bit flexible, especially with big names. So who knows what will happen with that, but no, I can't really see Biaggi doing a wild card in MotoGP. I don't think he'd be competitive, because he'd be on the Aprilia for a start, and, you know, Biaggi hasn't raced on Bridgestones for however many years now. And if I were Biaggi, I'd rather do a World Superbike round, maybe one against Troy Bayliss, so that you can at least say, you know, you were top, air quotes, old guy. No one get angry at me. Edwin Hazer, what is the reason for the rules for riders needing to remove their helmets while they're on the grid before the warm-up lap? I'm not sure there's a specific reason, but it's probably for media things. You know, remove their helmets so that they can do interviews and stuff. But some riders, they'll put on their helmets pretty quickly. Some riders leave it till the last minute. I will look into the rules for the next show. Again, Edwin Hazer, I feel like I should probably have the FIM rulebook sitting next to me for every show so I can have a quick flick through. Because there seem to be a lot of questions clarifying specific rules. One interesting rule that seems to be causing some confusion is the rookie rule. You have guys like Jorge Navarro, who are classed as a rookie in Moto3. However, to be considered a rookie, if you did more than 8 races in the previous season, you're not considered a rookie. So I'd have to double check, but I think Jorge Navarro did. Or maybe it wasn't, because he only did half a season. I'll have to check that one. But yeah, the rookie rule is if you did 8 wild cards in the previous season, or 8 rides in the previous season, then you're no longer classed as a rookie. So that's one that has caused some confusion. But anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. I think that the live format worked kind of well. It seemed to generate some interesting conversations for people who are able to listen in live, at least. Hopefully we'll be able to make this kind of a once-a-month deal and have more of a set time and a time that works better for everyone. If you have any feedback on the live format idea, be sure to send that to motopod@motopodcast.com. Everyone's ideas are welcome. And yeah, hopefully we can do this sort of thing once a month, you know, get some more fan interaction up there. And yeah, just try and mix it up a bit, you know? Try and keep it fresh and hip, you know, down with the kids. And I think it's time that I get dressed and go to work. So unless anyone wants to listen to me get changed, it's a bye from me. And I'll see everyone next week for some testing talk. Bye-bye. Just one from Jim. Harry, you're an Aussie living in the UK. Are you losing your convict status? No, fortunately not. I had to go up to London about a month ago now to get a passport to say that I'm still Australian, and that was a bit of a drama and a bit of a hassle. But luckily, still a convict. Then.